The Bible clearly teaches us that God designed marriage for happiness. But the truth is that a lot of people who are married are unhappy about it and with it. And so I think maybe there are some things that we could discuss tonight that would help remind us of the happiness that God has for married people who are faithful to Him. Now, a recent study surveyed various people groups and found out that the people who claim to be the happiest people were married men. The second happiest group was single women. I'm not really sure what to take from that. But that's what they found. Certainly, it tells us that there may be some work needed, especially on the part of women, but especially on the part of men, too. And so I think we all need to work on being happier as being married. Some commentators have referred to the words that Adam spoke upon seeing the woman that God had made for him as the world's first love song. And in fact, if you read it in the contemporary English version, it does record somewhat of the emotion that Adam had when he said in Genesis chapter 2, verse 23, the man exclaimed, "Here is someone like me. She is part of my body, my own flesh and bones. She came from me, a man. So I will name her woman." No matter what translation you may read of that, you can't deny the fact that the first man was really glad to see the first woman. But you know, happiness is not really automatic in marriage. There is no doubt that some of our young people have perhaps begun to look ahead and even maybe talk among themselves and talk to their parents and have even thought to themselves, "Oh, you know, when I get married, everything is going to go smoothly. It'll solve all of my problems. There won't anything be going wrong. All will just be blissful." But, you know, I'm afraid that's not going to be true. In addition to the tremendous amount of hard work that it takes to make and keep a marriage happy, there are a lot of things that we need to think about, and in fact, essentials that we need to make sure we incorporate into our lives if our marriages are going to be happy. What I'm saying is that marriage does not automatically mean happiness. A good Christian marriage, family, and home can be one of the happiest situations that a person would ever be in on this earth. But not all homes are happy. So let's look at two or three things that I'm going to call essentials for a happy marriage. Number one, I would put this at the very top of the list, and that would be a Christ-centered home. In Psalm 127, verse 1, the psalmist said, "Unless the Lord builds the house, those who build it labor in vain. Unless the Lord watches over the city, the watchman stays awake in vain." If you want a happy marriage, you must let Jesus Christ build your relationship. He has to be the foundation of that marriage. There's so many things that we look at and look to and even try to teach our young folks growing up that are going to be important things in their lives, things that we would consider to be foundational. We talk about the importance of a good education and learning a trade or some way to make a living in this world and being being smart and intelligent in handling money and all of those kind of things. But there isn't anything more essential to a happy marriage than Jesus Christ. Dr. James Dobson, author and speaker and counselor, told about a letter that he received one time. The letter said, "Dear Dr. Dobson, my husband has recently left me after 15 years of marriage. We had a great physical, emotional, and intellectual relationship. But something was missing. We had no spiritual bond between us. Please tell young couples that there will always be a void in their lives and in their marriages without Christ." You know, that sad letter drives home a very important point. You can have everything else under the sun. You can pack your marriage full of things like adventure and financial security and earthly stability, but if Jesus isn't there, there'll always be something missing. You see, it is from Christianity that we learn the most important things about the home. Ephesians 5, verse 25 tells us, "Husbands, love your wives even as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for it." That tells me that one of the greatest needs that a wife has is the need for the love of her husband. In that same chapter, verse 22, it says, "Wives, submit to your husbands." And from that, I know that one of the greatest needs that a husband has is the respect of his wife, to be looked to for leadership. You know, a critical part of becoming a good leader is in knowing that our family is counting on us to lead. Without the knowledge that someone needs to be led, without feeling like someone is depending on us, a lot of times we'll take the lazy way and we won't develop the ability to lead and to be strong. In Ephesians 6, verse 4, it says, "Fathers, provoke not your children to wrath." And from that, I can understand that the greatest needs that children have is their father's patience and understanding and realistic expectations. In 2 Corinthians 6, verse 14, the Bible tells us, "Be not unequally yoked with unbelievers. For what fellowship have righteousness and iniquity, or what communion hath light with darkness?" One of the best things about having a Christian wife is the fact that she loves God more than she loves me. Did you catch that? One of the best things about having a Christian wife is that she loves God more than she loves me. And if that's the case, then her most attractive quality is her spirituality. And that's exactly why we read in 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 3 and 4. "Do not let your adorning be external, the braiding of hair, the wearing of gold, the putting on of clothing, but let your adorning be the hidden person of the heart, with the imperishable beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which in God's sight is very precious." The fact is that in our efforts to have a Christ-centered home, there will always be something lacking if one of the principal persons in that home is not a Christian. And that's why we need to be teaching our young folks who are not yet married, be sure you marry a Christian. A Christ-centered home. Number two, committed love. Commitment is essential because at some point, sooner or later, and sometimes more than once, I guarantee you, your marriage will be tested by hardship. It may be disease and sickness. It might be rebellious children. It could be sin and temptation. Financial reverses, or even a move or a relocation due to a loss of employment or change in jobs. It might be an untimely death. Whatever it is, rest assured, it will come. And in some cases, it'll return again and again. Jesus assures us that in this world, we will have tribulations. John 16, verse 33. And a marriage is no exception to the Lord's words in that text. Just because we're married, or even just because we're Christians, doesn't mean that we will not be hit with difficulty, problems, trials, tribulations. You know, it's not just the great tragedies of life that put pressure on a marriage. More often, it's the minor irritants of daily life that, when accumulated over time, may even be more threatening than the catastrophic events that come crashing in without warning. In 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 28, Paul said, "Yet those who marry will have worldly troubles." There was a classified ad that appeared in the Rocky Mountain News a few years ago. It went just like this. "Will trade my non-cooking spouse with an attitude problem for one Super Bowl ticket. No Indian givers. Call Jim 762-1000. Hurry." Well, you couldn't put an ad like that in the paper without getting some attention. And sure enough, the news media found this guy and interviewed him. And he said, oh, absolutely. He was dead serious. He was not kidding. He said that his wife refused to go to the grocery store for food because the roads were too slick. And he said, quote, "I get tired of that kind of stuff after a while." You know, in the real world, there are times when a marriage is a pleasure, and there are times when a marriage can be a real duty. There'll always be arguments and disappointments and personality conflicts. I can only imagine the frustration of that guy who created that first bumper sticker that said, "I knew I was marrying Miss Wright. I just didn't know her first name was Always." There will be times when difficulties will challenge us. There will be times when there will be nothing left for us to hold together with one another except for our commitment and our love. Make sure that you don't try to build a marriage without committed love. Number three, consistent communication. I don't think I can say enough on this subject, but I'm not going to try. A recent study reveals that working couples spend only about 12 minutes a day talking with each other. Honestly, I'm a little surprised that that number is as large as it is. Because I know some folks, some married folks, some husbands and wives, both working one or sometimes two jobs each, and they barely even see each other at all, let alone have time in the course of a typical day to sit down and exchange communication. According to that same study, about 36 minutes a day is spent together in cooking, cleaning, shopping, paying bills, and demonstrating affection. Again, I'm a little bit leery of that number because I think it's actually a little bit greater than reality, at least for a lot of people that I know. The bottom line is there are too many husbands and wives who do not communicate with one another. A husband and wife need to make an effort to talk and listen to each other if they expect to have a happy marriage. Now, sometimes the talking is the part that comes the hardest, especially for us guys. Ladies, you need to understand that most of us fellows find it very difficult to talk about our problems. If we're having a hard time with something, we may take one of several what I call man options to deal with that problem. Sad to say, some of us try to deal with it by ignoring it. That is seldom very effective. Just really doesn't work very well at all. Sometimes we prefer to sort of mull it over to our own selves and then jump on it and ride it out in our own way. Now, there is a ever so slight possibility that we prefer that method because that way you can't say, "See, I told you that wouldn't work." But sometimes, admittedly, we get a little bit hung up in that male ego thing that makes us feel like we're not holding up our responsibilities if we have to ask for help, especially from our wives. Now, as you can plainly see, none of those are valid reasons for not communicating between husbands and wives. So bear with us and pray for us. Because if we're that way, we need to change, and we need your support in trying to change as best we can. But then sometimes it's the listening that is the greater of the challenges. This is actually true on both sides. But girls, please try to remember that as a typical male, your husband is emotionally handicapped. What I mean by that is he rarely takes an emotional, feelings-laden view of things. And therefore, he may not see the significance in the fact that nobody at church noticed your new hairdo. And in all likelihood, he won't understand your need to go on and on about that. Because he just doesn't take an emotional view of things. It's hard to hurt his feelings. Now, all of this just serves to drive home the fact that some of the most prominent difficulties in the Department of Marital Communication have to do with the differences between the sexes. A few years back, John Gray wrote that book, Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus. I never did get around to reading that thing or the four other sequels that came out after it, I think. But, you know, the title itself goes a long way in verifying the truth that men and women are really, really different in the way they look at things, the way they react to things. And sometimes that plays a big role in making some of the communication between husbands and wives a little bit different, a little bit difficult. Let me explain. Ladies, don't assume that your husband can read between the lines to figure out what you mean. For example, if you say, "Dear, I put your shoes in the closet for you," the poor dumb guy just thinks you're being helpful, and he says, "Thank you, sweetheart." He doesn't have a clue that what you really mean is, I pick up after you just like I do the kids, and you're a grown man. It hurts my feelings that you don't have any more consideration for me than that, that I have to follow around behind you and pick up dirty clothes. Ladies, and I know that a lot of you have this figured out already, hints don't work with men. Men are not smart enough to take hints. We can't figure out what you mean if you're just hinting at something. If it needs to be said, you just really need to come out and say it. Then to the other extreme, guys, be careful about jumping the gun and assuming that she means more than she's saying, because actually sometimes she doesn't. For example, she says, "Dear, the garbage needs to be taken out." Now, maybe you're assuming that what she really means is, "All you do around here is sit on the couch and watch TV. I'm sick and tired of doing all this work because I'm doing it all by myself just to try to keep this place clean." So since you think that's what she means, you snap back at her and you say, "Well, why don't you just get off my case? You're always nagging at me about something, but I work hard every day just like you do. You're not the only one who gets tired around here. I told you last Thursday I was going to take the garbage out, and as soon as this game is over, I'll do it." Now, does that sound like the kind of communication that goes on at your house? That probably is more typical of husbands and wives today in America than most of us would want to admit. And in all of this, I simply want to remind us that we need to be more careful with our communication. We need to be loving and kind and clear with what we say to one another. Neither of those examples are good communication. Of course, it would help a lot if you just put your shoes in the closet when you take them off and go ahead and take the garbage out when you said you would. All of those things are very important. As I said, it would be impossible for me to address this subject sufficiently, because I think this poses one of the greatest challenges that has ever existed in human relations, and especially in families between husbands and wives. Consistent communication. Without question, marriage is hard work. In fact, that's the title of a sermon that I hope to use within the next week or two. Every good marriage has parts and pieces to it that need to be fixed from time to time. And so we all need to work at it. Every last one of us, not a single one of us, husband, wife, male, female, none of us is exempt from the need to try a little bit harder to make our marriages work. The bottom line is that every one of us has the opportunity, with God's help, to make our marriages as God would have them to be. If you're subject to our Lord's invitation, we sing this song to encourage you and invite you to respond as we stand together and sing.